Welcome to Two Bits, Coins and Currency, a podcast hosted by Mitch Sanders and Doug Mudd, a production of the American Numismatic Association.
In this episode of Two Bits, we're going to talk about numismatic reading. We've been spending a lot of time at home lately, so this is something that is a good way to get involved with a hobby or stay involved with a hobby through doing some reading. And we're going to talk about it in some interesting ways. We're going to talk about things that can be read online, like the Newman Numismatic Portal and the Numismatist Digital Archive, and then also, quote, old-fashioned ways of reading, which is to say actual books, which I know, Doug, you and I are both still very, very fond of, as are many others, of course, and we'll talk about a couple of particular recommendations for good reading material.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a really good time for it, but what's really nice about it is that there's more material available online than ever before. When you combine that with the books that you may have in your library, it's amazing what we can rediscover as we spend some more time at home, because we're not as busy as we usually are. And for me, it's been a bit of a revelation seeing things like what exactly is available out there. The Newman Portal has gotten amazing. There's amazing amounts of material out there that was never available, and now it's at your fingertips. You don't have to go to the archives. You don't have to go to places all over the country, colleges, universities, the Smithsonian, the National Archives, all these repositories. Much of the information has been joined in one place, and that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of good opportunities, and that's what we'll want to talk about. And we should say anything that we talk about on this podcast will be listed at money.org/podcast. Do you want to talk about the Newman Numismatic Portal for a bit?
Yeah, one of the great innovations that has occurred in just the last few years is a combination of various research and new technology developments. Basically, with newer technologies for scanning and then the increased ability of the web to have larger and larger amounts of information, the storage space in terms of digital storage space is much cheaper than it used to be. It's not possible to scan vast amounts of information in a way that would have been way too time consuming in the past. And the Newman Portal has been able to take advantage of the new technologies to make available vast amounts of information through scanning technology that they can bring to sites such as the ANS Library, such as various archives throughout the country, and using some innovative research software, make it available in a way that wasn't possible just a few years ago. So this information not only is being scanned, and this goes from club periodicals to standard numismatic books, which have been under digitized over the last 15 years that digitization has been occurring. People have been digitizing history books and all sorts of other types of works, but numismatic books generally haven't been digitized much, partly because they tend to be image heavy. You know, there's a lot of images and you want to get good quality scans, and that wasn't possible 10 years ago. So Newman Portal has brought all this together and put it under the rubric of a search engine that allows some really deep, involved searches for anything from certain numismatic terms, denominations, other things, and by collecting so much information. So these are personal archives, club archives, things like the U.S. archives, they're working with that, and then combine that with library references, all of a sudden, connections are being made that were never made in the past.
I think they envision it as a virtual encyclopedia of numismatics, and it does fulfill that function. It's not A to Z. Some elements of it are, but there are so many resources there that any subject you can imagine, you can find either a document or a reference to another document that will explain something about what you're searching for. if you want to find the Newman Numismatic Portal, just a Google search for Newman Numismatic Portal will bring you right there. And it's Newman, like Paul Newman, but I don't think they're related, but it's spelled the same way. It's a super resource, and there are many things that I find there that are really interesting. Old reference works, I don't know what the cutoff period is, but anything before a certain year is sufficiently in the public domain that it can just be scanned and presented. One thing I was looking at recently was the volume on Betz medals, which are contemporary medals that illustrate colonial American history. That's a classic reference, and that's there on the Newman Numismatic Portal. I always enjoy looking at Mint Director reports, and I think the full collection is on there. They've all been digitized. These are really interesting volumes that get into the operations of the United States Mint facilities, and there are things like mintage figures, which are interesting, and there are also narratives about the history of coinage and as things have developed. There are examinations of coins around the world, particular things that happen to particular mints. The Mint Director reports are a great resource. And then the one last thing that I'll mention that I really think is a terrific resource is the Lisseau Video Library. David Lisseau is a videographer, and for decades he's been going around to coin shows and other events, and he records videos of seminars and presentations and goings on at coin shows. And this archive of videos is available through the Newman Numismatic Portal. If there's ever a CoinFlix to compete with Netflix, this would be at the core of it, because there are hundreds of things that you're sure to find something that's of interest. All the presentations from coin shows, major coin shows that people do and have done over the years, that's all recorded. That's a super resource.
Yeah, it's an amazing resource from that standpoint, because, for example, the American Numismatic Association at our conventions, we always have a series called Money Talks. And for many years, David was involved in videotaping all of those. So there's an archive of the Money Talks going way back. And it's one of those things where there's amazing information. There's jewels that you can look at, and they're amazingly topical and a lot of fun to watch. And other things are less interesting. It's as with any archives, there's a lot of information that's in there that is probably useless for any particular person, but that's what's incredible about it. The vast amount means that as we go on, what makes the Newman portal really valuable in the end is not that all the information is there just sitting there. It's that people are using that information for the first time to really make new connections. In right. many cases, connections that weren't possible before. So, for example, Eric P. Newman kept all of his letters from his almost 100 years of activity in the numismatic hobby. He corresponded with all of the great dealers and important people throughout the hobby during that time. There's information in there that nobody would think about or even be aware existed, but by doing certain searches, you can get that information, and then you can connect that to other places like the archives of the U.S. Mint, or perhaps information from the San Francisco Federal Reserve, where there's amazing paper collections that Newman was involved in creating a display for. And new connections can be made for the first time that weren't possible. You know, in the past, it would have taken somebody who actually went physically to each of those places.
Right, right. There's so much more ability to scan things, as you said, and to have it be usable and readable and searchable, so that those connections are possible. And as you were talking, I was thinking about making connections. Some of the connections that I've made through the portal are connections back in time. I mean, the hobby of numismatics and coins and currency are very much about going back in time, but a lot of it for me was on a personal basis. I did a Money Talks presentation probably in 2003, and every now and then I bring it up, sometimes to try to impress my daughter, which I have some success in doing that. Also to remind myself of what my hairline looked like in 2003. I see a person who had similar interests and a similar style, but a very different hairline. Also, this is in a different direction, but as I was looking at things recently, I found a presentation by Nancy Green from the early 2000s, who was a wonderful person who I knew, longtime librarian at the American Numismatic Association, and who died recently. And through this archive, I was able to see her give a presentation in the early 2000s about a subject that was of great interest to her. So along with the connections to coins and currency and the connections of coins and currency to other elements of the human experience, there's also those personal connections. And I really valued being able to experience that when I looked at the portal recently.
Yeah, Nancy Green was a really special person, a great librarian. And she was interested in collecting the medals about books and things like that. So it was, you know, medals and coins that referred to books were something that naturally fit into her collecting. Sure. And that sort of leads into some of the stories about what's going on now. For, you know, for example, one of the things that I've been doing, aside from being involved in some meetings that I didn't think would have been possible, say, 3 or 4 months ago, for example, my dinner club, it's a numismatic dinner club, probably half of the guys in there use the computer, but only barely. You know, they're able to use the internet and write emails and stuff like that, but they're not very comfortable with technology. And yet we were able to have a meeting where over half of our members were able to use Zoom, and it was great. We had a great meeting. We all turned in photos of the coins that we wanted to talk about ahead of time, so we were able to put them out there via email and then look at them as we talked about them during our meeting.
And actually, so on Zoom, no one can see this, but I'm doing this because I'm on Zoom with Doug. You can even do a little bit of a show and tell. It's not ideal. I'm holding up a big Benjamin Franklin medal right now, and it's not the same as seeing it in person. You don't have quite the right lighting, and you can't see its luster and how it reflects the light. And so it's not the same as being there, but still it's at least a rudimentary show and tell that is possible. In addition to, of course, the personal connections that motivate so much of this. Before we move on to another subject, I do want to put in a really profound plug for one of my favorite resources, which is the Numismatist Digital Archive. So the Numismatist, the ANA's monthly journal, magazine, all past issues back to 1888 have been digitized. You can read them in their original form, i.e. as if you're flipping through the pages, the page images are exactly as they were originally published. You can also search, which is extremely valuable because there's so much there. And in addition to having the information there, that's useful, but it's less useful if you have to flip through everything. The search function is fantastic. You'll find something that's interesting about pretty much any subject under the sun. And it's been really enjoyable to me to go through the archives. You can do it on a computer. You can do it on a tablet, an iPad, or another kind of tablet. That works really well because it's roughly the same physical shape and form as a magazine, so it's more like flipping pages. You could look at it on a phone, although you'd have to do a lot of zooming or look at only a small portion at once. But there's fascinating stuff in there. Feature articles, as I said, on every subject under the sun. Things about hobby activities. When the American Numismatic Association was working toward developing hobby-wide consistent grading standards in the 1970s, you can see reports about that as it was evolving over time. And then cool things that I just wouldn't have thought of as being part of the media in that way. Now in the world we live in, we have access to so much information all the time. It's almost like nothing ever takes us by surprise in terms of developments or what's coming out. Obviously things can be surprising, but so many things, we see them coming from a long time away, and we get information from lots of different sources. But 100 years ago, if you wanted to know about developments in the hobby or new coin design or things that were happening in the hobby, reading the Numismatist was pretty much the way to do it. So the development of new coin designs was presented in the pages of the Numismatist. I found an article where Victor David Brenner, who was the designer of the Lincoln Cent, he was criticizing the design of the then new peace dollar. And I thought, I had no idea. I knew about the life and career of Victor David Brenner, but I didn't know how coin designers related to one another. And apparently at least sometimes, one coin designer would be really critical about the work of another coin designer. So there are all kinds of nuggets of interesting information in there. Definitely worth checking out. The Numismatist Digital Archive is available through the money.org website. It's always a perk of membership, but for a while, I think maybe through July 1st is the current plan, it's yes, free and open to anyone. So definitely encourage everyone to take a look at that. There's a lot of really good stuff in there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really cool that the ANA has done is we've opened up our digital membership to everyone so that you can get in and see all of the aspects of the money.org website, including those that are normally reserved only for paying members. So it's a great resource that is now available to everybody. So it's something that you should take advantage of while you can.
Yeah, once you delve in, I don't know when you might emerge. You could just keep returning to it and have it with you and just keep exploring. I really enjoy that resource. As our last bit, I guess, of two bits, I know we each have some ideas for books that a collector might read and find interesting. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. Both of us have extensive libraries of our own, and we're both actively getting into finding new books and reading them on a regular basis. And for me, the latest book I just received actually only a week ago is by a guy named Neil Musanti. And the title of the two-volume set is Medallic Washington. It's the latest in a series of works that more or less began in the 1880s and 90s with a man named William Baker, who created the first comprehensive guide to all things numismatic that were related to George Washington. The original book by Baker was very interesting because he put all of this stuff together and had a sort of eclectic classification. He called them political medals and commemorative medals and just created this classification out of the blue that made sense to him at the time. And that became sort of the basis for the follow-up works for the next century. Russell Rulau and George Fuld and others were involved in updating his original book on Washington medals. So in 2016, Neil Musanti came out with this latest work. And what he attempted to do was not only add to the corpus, but reorganize the material in a way that made sense to him that would fit more modern ideas of how medals, coins, and tokens should be put together. They're all united by this theme of George Washington and images of George Washington, and he created a single modern numbering system for it. So if you happen to collect George Washington material, this is the latest and greatest of works available for it. What is really special about what he's doing is all of them are illustrated with first-class images, and he's created a correspondence between the original Baker numbers and the newer Russell Rulau and George Fuld numbers so that all of them could be cross-referenced. So for a collector, this becomes really important. You can actually take an older piece that might be referenced by a Baker number and relate it to the modern GW number, which is what Musanti uses in his current set. But it's a beautiful work, really well bound and with first class color photos. So it's well worth the read. He's a good writer. There's not a huge amount of text. Most of it is taken up by the actual listings and cataloging with the photos of each of the objects. But it's a great work. I highly recommend it.
I've seen it. I don't have it. I've seen it and I've heard it described in the way you're describing as just a wonderful work of scholarship and cataloging and outstanding production values. Let me ask you this. I think it's pretty safe to say that Washington, if you think about everyone in American history, numismatic tributes to Washington far outnumber numismatic tributes to anyone else in American history. Lincoln, I think, there's a book about Lincoln's metallic imagery, which is a great book. But I think Washington has clearly been on more items than Lincoln, and I don't even know who would be in third place. Seems pretty distant. Is there anyone else, either in American history or in world history, who you can think of who is on a par with Washington in terms of how frequently they've been honored on some kind of numismatic item?
Well, today, one of the things that's developed is the sheer longevity of Elizabeth II and the vast number of countries for which she is queen has resulted in a comparison. It's interesting, Queen Elizabeth, as the Queen of Great Britain, Queen of England, Scotland, Wales, and all that, because when she became queen, the British Empire still existed, and it still exists technically today, but it was still a vast empire, you know, with the classic, the sun never sets on the British Empire sort of right. thing. Because the empire devolved and broke up into its component parts, you now have something like 50 countries that used to be part of the empire. Many of them, 16 of them, still recognize Queen Elizabeth as their monarch, even though they are now separate governments with their own constitutional, usually democratic systems. Well, the result has been you've got all of these different countries with her imagery along yeah. with Great Britain itself. So you see her image on Canadian pieces. You see her image on Australia, New Zealand, various countries in Africa for a while, the Pacific. So depending on how you parse it, for the sheer number of coins, maybe not, because the United States produces so many quarters and so many other images that have been produced in the past in medals and tokens. But if you talk about the different official images for different countries, Queen Elizabeth would hold at least one of the records.
It's a pretty rarefied company to be in when you're talking about George Washington and Queen Elizabeth. And she is on coinage of many countries, but of course not the coinage of the United States. And that's thanks in large part to George Washington. So
absolutely.
When,
yeah.
When we're comparing the two, that's one way of comparing. So my book recommendation is The Story of Silver, and it's written by an economics professor at NYU by the name of William Silber with a B. So maybe it was inevitable that a professor named Silber would write a book about silver. The subtitle is How the White Metal Shaped America and the Modern World. It's not a coin book per se. It's a book about history and financial history, but there are so many interesting intersections between that story and the story that we see on coinage. One example of this is on the cover of the book is an uncirculated Morgan dollar, which is a great symbol of American coinage and a great symbol of the importance of silver. I'll mention just a few cool things in the book. It opens with a price chart, 200 years of the history of the price of silver, along with some explanations about the reasons for the fluctuations. It gets into the details about the free silver movement in the late 19th century. It has a chapter about a person named Key Pittman, who is a senator from Nevada, and many numismatists will recognize Key Pittman as the person who was responsible for the legislation that caused the melting of hundreds of millions of Morgan dollars. Well, he's got a chapter about all the other things he did related to silver, being a senator from Nevada. There's even a photo of him, if you want to get an image of what this person looked like who caused the melting of all those coins. It talks about the silver subsidies in the 1930s in the United States and how that intersected with global politics, especially in China on the eve of World War II, and a lot of interesting connections there. It talks about the removal of silver from coinage in the 1960s. It talks about the Hunt brothers in the 1970s, how they tried to corner the market on silver. And this is a bit of trivia I did not realize, but the Hunt brothers of silver fame are in the same family as Lamar Hunt, who is the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs and who was yeah. instrumental in the development of the Super Bowl. So that was a connection I was not expecting to another element of culture. So like I said, it's not a numismatic book per se, but it's really compelling. And I found like every 10 pages I would read something and I would recognize a connection between facets of American numismatics that you can see in coinage and that you could see very clearly in the story of silver. So it's a fascinating read, and I would highly recommend that to anyone interested in American coinage and its history.
That very topical too. I see these ads all the time talking about buying silver, that silver is at an all-time low, or you know, something along those lines. And if trend, you know, silver prices are going higher right now, and if trends continue, they might, the price of silver might reach the all-time high levels. And those all-time high levels they're talking about are from the time period when the Hunt brothers were attempting to corner the silver market. That's where silver got up to about $50 an ounce.
I know, and I think a lot of people have really interesting stories from that time. I was a kid, but even I knew something was going on because there was so much silver coming through the coin shop that my friends and I could search through it. It was just like bags of silver half dollars. No one had even searched through. They weren't looking for rare dates or anything. It was just being treated as bullion, but we could pick whatever we wanted. I found a bunch of nice Walking Liberty half dollars, Barber halves, a lot of Colombian commemorative half dollars, some rare Mercury dimes. The per piece price was pretty high because of the turmoil in the silver market, but still there were a lot of interesting opportunities. And I've heard many stories about just how crazy it was with bullion in those days. And you can get a really good sense of that, among other things, from the book.
Very interesting. Yeah. Sounds like something that would be an important read for anybody that collects Morgan dollars or some of the other U.S. silver, just to understand the background to why they were issued in the first place.
Right. And it's got a Morgan dollar on the cover. So yeah, that's as much as anything, that's a good endorsement of its numismatic content.
That's it for this edition of 2Bits Coins and Currency. Thank you for listening, and remember to go to money.org/podcast to find out more about this podcast and the American Numismatic Association.